cable, Mike?
No, I've ordered it. It should arrive today, too late for today's recording.
Okay, fine.
But the listeners next week can look forward to creamy, creamy sound.
So creamy mic.
I've gone for the triple cream cables.
The triple cream, and it means you can, for the first time, extend your microphone. Oh. This is using cutting-edge technology halfway into the moustache. So you'll be broadcasting from within when some of the sound waves will be coming from within the moustache.
Within the canopy.
Within the canopy.
That would be lovely, because at the moment I'm mostly using that canopy, that hair canopy, as a kind of pop shield, is the idea.
Yeah, it's currently working as a pop shield, isn't it? And crumb barrier.
Crumb barrier.
And crumb barrier. So, yeah.
Anti-moth net.
Yeah, it's got so many purposes, hasn't it? The natural moustache, it is one of nature's wonders.
It's got a selection of novellas. I can file my novellas in there as well.
CDs, obviously, not relevant
back
anymore,
in the day,
but they used to slip into it. So
CD, it was the absolutely perfect CD rack.
Yeah, it was a horizontal CD rack, wasn't it? Which meant they did fall straight out, but you know, just get it on the sound deck. Do you know what I mean?
If you ever go to a provincial B&B and they've, for some reason, lost the toast rack, you can just prostrate yourself on the table.
Yeah.
I often get a discount if I do that.
Yeah, and a lot of B&B still have the Wozniak's cranium-shaped indentation in the middle of the table.
Yes, the only trouble is when they know you, then sometimes they want you to lie down on the table the night before, because they like to get it all set the night before, and they want to put out the egg cups and they want to put out the butter.
That's
so
right.
It's not too hard in the morning.
Yeah. Oh, and they're very... has to be said, they can be very strict, and so those elderly couples that run B&Bs could actually be quite cruel with you, couldn't they?
Oh, they're absolute, yeah, they're nasty pieces of work, yeah.
Really, they really,
man.
For the most part, they are, aren't they?
But I know to say no if they ask if they can use my belly button as a marmalade container. I know that now.
Yeah,
it doesn't work,
and
no one's happy.
It's too big, isn't it?
It's too big. That's too much marmalade.
It's way too big.
It's
just.
Even if you've got 8 to 10 guests, no one's getting through all that marmalade. No way.
And most people, the general belief is that belly buttons, is something that most of us discover as children, don't have a hole in the bottom that links through into your internal organs. but that's actually not true with Mike, because you've got a very large belly button, but it also says that marmalade was sort of vortexing, wasn't it, downwards, dripping very slowly.
Into a complex sort of cave system, yeah. I've got a sort of abdominal mendips, is what it's been called.
That's right.
Because it's made of limestone, isn't it?
It's mostly limestone. It's a little bit of chalk, but principally it has been eroded.
But also that marmalade that has dripped through has formed really, really quite fascinating. It's encrusted into really quite fabulous formations, hasn't it?
They're almost like frescoes in a way.
They are.
But Henry was about to say either stalagmites or stalactites, but I could see him pull out of it.
You know what, stalagmites? Because obviously we do love them in the mnemonic, don't we? On this podcast, stalactites and stalagmites is one that I've got a very good one for.
Okay, yeah. Here we go.
Which is stalactites. Imagine a pair of tights which you might buy from Boots, or all the way up to top end
specialist online retailer.
Online retailers, and the full range, but picture any pair of tights you want.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Mine are over the face of a bank robber.
Okay.
Does that complicate the picture?
What? How many of the legs is his head in? Both.
It's kind of in the seat, I guess.
He's in the seat. Oh, right. Oh, that's nice. So he's using the legs as a kind of a pair of little bunny ears.
Right.
Yes.
Just to soften the... Otherwise, it's too intimidating, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like a terrifying gun wielding huge rabbit.
Okay, so it's not two bank robbers, one in each leg, that work as very tightly as a unit.
No.
Okay.
The other one is wearing one of those cardboard, you pop out the eyes, sort of Prince Charles masks that you can get.
Yeah. Okay.
All stand for the king.
We're entering the regal zone. Regal zone. Regal zone.
Off with their heads.
On with the show.
Listen not to the whores and the shopkeepers.
Bring me more advisors.
The regal zone. Regal zone.
So that's the stalagmite, is it? So Prince Charles is the stalagmite.
Well, hang on, we don't know which era Charles are we talking?
It's like 81, 82, so like marriage to Diana.
Marriage and conducting.
Charles, yeah.
Over 200 complicated affairs. with blue-blooded, horsey, top brass.
Top totty.
quite literally top totty. In terms of the social structure of social structures of 1980s Britain, yeah. Yeah, so that one, is it? Yeah, so that's Mike. You're right. That's a stalactite.
Tight. Okay.
And then the other way, and then the other one is you don't need one for the other one because the other one is just stalagmites. Just the opposite of that.
Okay.
So that's Prince Charles wearing wearing a bank robber's
and the bank robbers they're robbing a boot. I think, is that right?
So Prince Charles is wearing a bank robber over his head as a disguise. And they're robbing an upside-down boots.
But the upside-down boots is on the ground. It's on ground level, but it is upside down.
It's ground level. Ground level upside down, yeah.
Okay.
So that's the opposite one. Now, there is a good way of doing it, which is stag tights. So just imagine a pair of tights. Mm-hmm. Imagine you're in a cave, and you just whop them up, push them up onto two legs, or human legs that are sticking down through the roof of the cave.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just swap those caves, keep the cave, swap the legs.
So, what are we swapping the cave with? Or are we just turning the cave 180 degrees?
Swap the cave briefly for a boot.
Get a fresh pair of tights.
Fresh pair of
tights. Meal deal.
Quickly notice how difficult it is to find your way around the boots. Bloody hell. What is this, a nightmare? I mean, the amount of times I come in here looking for those things that you clean your ears with, I don't even know what they're called. Well, I know you're not supposed to use them. I can't even find them. I mean, maybe it's on purpose. So where they do sushi. Then flip out, you're back in the cave.
Sushi's gone. No sushi.
Sushi's gone.
Too late.
But now what's changed in the cave is, well, earlier you whopped that pair of ties up above your head and slipped it over two human legs that were sticking down to the top of the cave. Those human legs have gone. Mm-hmm.
There's now a man from the National Trust asking you to leave.
Yeah. Because it said clearly you're not supposed to go beyond the banisters.
These are ancient cave paintings. They're some of the last vestiges of our heritage, our artistic heritage as humans. You've drawn a face on this saber-toothed tiger.
Looks like the face of the king in his youth.
You're garbling some nonsense about Boots meals deals. The nearest Boots, I think, is in...
Well, it'd be Cheltenham from here, wouldn't it?
It's in Cheltenham from here, isn't it? It's in Cheltenham. Is it open now? It's 5:45. So you take your chances. I'm certainly not going to be giving you a lift because you've given me a mountain of paperwork to deal with. So true, you're the only person that's actually visited these caves in 6 years, so I should probably be grateful. But that's not including the toads, of course.
So which is a stalagmite?
That's a stalagmite.
Stalagmite scenario. The National Trust, the might of the National Trust.
Well, I tell you what, maybe they spent too much thinking about stalagmite. They didn't think about whether they stalag should.
And stalag luft?
Stalag what?
What does stalag luft mean? I've seen that written down somewhere.
It's a prison.
Is it?
How is it?
It's a World War II series of prisons.
Don't say that as if we're meant to know that, Mike. Not all of us have the encyclopedic knowledge of British.
WW2, as he calls it.
I think they're quite notorious. POW camps.
In a complex cave system?
Exactly.
But honestly, genuinely, have you got that mnemonic yet?
No. Far more confused than when we started.
Well, this is what I was taught. I was taught as a child this same one on trips to Wookiee Hole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
in Somerset, great place. I do recommend it.
I've not actually been there.
Oh, it's brilliant. There's a stalagmite that looks like a witch, and that's basically it.
How much like a witch?
Not at all like a witch, really. But they really
I just can't believe it.
It's
doesn't
a real
like a witch,
eye of
sorry.
Faith job. It's a leap of eye of faith.
Also, because a witch, I'm thinking hat wise, we might be able to use this as a mnemonic. Hat wise, a witch looks like a stalagmite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's what they show you and tell you it looks like a witch.
Oh, I see. That's the one, is it? Oh, it's a stalag. Well, I was picturing a stalactite for some reason. Yeah, you wouldn't have a stalactite that looked like a witch unless it was an upside-down witch, which wouldn't put past them.
Well, once we've finished working out the difference between a stalagmite and stalactite and learning what Henry's calling the mnemonic, can we then have a system by which we teach Henry what a mnemonic is?
Oh yeah.
And how to say it.
Okay, I'm up for that. But first, let's just put this one to bed quickly.
So I was taught stalactites are the ones that come down because exactly. tights go down
like a pair of tights on a woman or a man, or like a pair of tights that's being worn on some legs.
Robin Hood
pointing. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And when I say go down, I don't mean pull down tights. I mean just tights sort of go from top to bottom, really.
Oh, what do you mean? Do you mean stockings?
When I was taught it by the volunteer at Wookiee Hole, it wasn't a guy being like, well, stalactites are tights because obviously when I'm around, they come down, you know?
No one's suggesting that sort of cave banter, Ben.
Uh-oh.
Lewd content warning. Lewd content.
Hey, hey, hey! That is a thing of the past, that kind of cave banter.
I was there in the 80s, wasn't I? Learning about stalactites. It's a different time.
It was, wasn't it? Because the tour guides were always things like, oh, I'll tell you what, a pleasure to a woman down here 3 weeks ago. You can steal the echo of her making a loud orgasmic wail. That wasn't it.
It was that crisp.
Yeah.
Because they rehearsed it. It was a patter. They workshopped it from tour group to tour group.
They knew what they were doing. Yeah.
And then one of the other guides would then hide around the corner and make sort of orgasmic wails.
Yeah. Tell you what, you think these cave walls are moist? You should see how sweaty my buttocks get when I'm at it.
Oh, God.
It was like, it was though, wasn't it? I mean, yeah, we laugh now, but it wasn't, you know.
It was a childhood.
I've lost count of the amount of times the volunteer at a sort of family day out started talking about the moistness or otherwise of his buttocks. Oh,
exactly. Well, you'd be too busy smoking to pay attention to what they're saying a lot of the time, wouldn't you?
I was normally half cup by then as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Couple of brandies in the car.
Yeah.
A thimble of glue.
Yeah. Yeah. Couple of tabloids tucked under each arm. Wasn't it? Some lurid Prince Charles related normally.
Anyway, a mnemonic. Isn't that when you sort of like an acrostic poem? Isn't that like when you have...
Oh, yeah, cool, thanks. Just like an acrostic poem. We're sorted now. That's good. We can just move on, can't we? All of us. Thanks.
I think it's just a memory.
No, isn't it? Isn't it when there's letters or something, isn't there? So they correspond.
Yeah, but I always thought that was a subset of mnemonics.
No, piss off, you fucking arse.
So you're saying mnemonic is any way to remember anything is a mnemonic.
No,
but it's like an acronym. It's like what Richard and York died in battle in vain. That's two indigos in my rainbow.
What the heck? Is that how you're remembering the order of the rainbow or the order of the kings?
Rainbow, the colours in the rainbow. Richard of York.
You just remember.
Yellow.
But how do you remember Richard of York? The assumption is that that's easier to remember than red, yellow. What's the other one? Okay, that works. Tick.
Well, because the idea is there's a little narrative, there's a structure.
Okay, yeah, no, that makes sense, yeah.
So that for me is a mnemonic, I think.
But other people use visual, because visual aids is often good for memory. So, for example, what you could do is imagine a picture of a cave, you know, a kind of a knobbled cave extrusion coming downwards, a stalactite. So picture that as an image, then picture next to it a picture of the word stalactite, but not the word. So it has to be a picture of the word. Don't think of the word, because that's a different part of the brain. That's the word part of the brain. That's not going to help here. What you need is the visual part of the brain, which is active, you know, from the second we're born, unlike language, which develops later. So imagine the word stalactite, but all sort of furry, for example. Right. Just give it a visual.
One of those fur pictures.
Like a fur picture.
It's been rendered
picture
in
fur. Picture it, Mike, something hanging up in the Tate Modern, and you're looking at it going, bloody hell, I've travelled all the way from bloody Exeter.
I'm there.
Call that, and you got it, haven't you? You call this art, it's not even a very, 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 very realistic painting of a boat. Am I supposed to believe it's art? I tell you what, unless I'm trying to literally get on board onto it, it's not art, because it's that realistic. Yeah. Unless I can actually almost smell crabs.
Ring the crab bell. First time in the series, I think.
Bloody hell, it's been a while. little. They've not never been far from our thoughts, though, have they?
No,
it's
never.
It's always there.
For Mike, really, it's not art unless it is maritime. So unless you can imagine it on the wall in a sort of maritime-themed pub.
Or a toilet, of course.
Yeah.
Which meant that Mike briefly did actually overlap with the Brit Art movement with Damien Hirst Shark, which Mike thought was absolutely brilliant.
I thought that was quite radical.
You thought it was absolutely brilliant. But then you saw the Brit Art sheep, then the sheep next door, you're like...
I just thought that was a piece of agricultural vandalism, frankly. The proper process is to dispose of dead sheep.
Yeah.
And for very good reasons.
Well, you called 999, didn't you? You called 999. Ruined another day out in London. Yet again with your family wait outside an art gallery waiting for the police to arrive.
Okay, let's turn on the bean machine.
Yes, please.
How's the... I know some of the bean... Because it's spring. There's obviously, there are challenges to the bean machine, aren't there, in spring? A lot of spores. Because it's a bit like a mechanical version of hay fever, isn't it, that you suffer? Because all your pipes get sort of full up, don't they, with...
With cubs.
With various different bear cubs, squirrel cubs, different...
Seal cubs.
Isn't it? Fox cubs.
Well, actually, no, you're sort of wrong. This is the time of year when those cubs come out of hibernation and actually clear out the tubes. And it's quite a lovely thing to see, a little
bit of symbiotic
bear cub
tube clearing.
Blinking out into the lights, really lovely to see.
Having eaten some of the toxic slurry from the pipes.
Yeah. Exactly. And indeed, that has then turned into a fecal plug, which has remained there through the winter to stop defecation. And then they come out blinking into the sunlight. They pass the fecal plug, which is an incredible thing to see.
Can you describe it for us, actually? Just because I think it is that amazing. Obviously, Mike and I have seen it many times, but
yeah. Well, imagine
the listeners.
1,000 Mars bars left in a hot car, then taken out, let out of their packet, then rolled in hay and fluff and feathers.
Yeah,
and some of the sort of bioluminescent algae you sometimes see in a Mediterranean grotto.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah.
And certain kinds of fungus that you only find in those underground crypts that are made of bones. Mm-hmm. And skulls.
You're talking about a Necrone basement.
For Necrone storage.
Just off the A7. A big black storage company. Necrone storage. You'll be surprised by our rates. They're almost good enough to die for. Just off the A4 junction 6.
Here's a tip, actually. The amount that my car insurance dropped when I told them that I was storing my car in my own Necrona garage was amazing. So if you can find 1,000 or thereabouts skulls and stack them around the corner of your garage, around the sides of your garage, that then qualifies as a Necrona garage. And you'll probably get 20-30% off.
And the ancient Mesopotamian artisan who can put that together as well.
Yes.
They're expensive. Yes. And there is a waiting list.
Although, actually, Mike, increasingly on... if you go on Nextdoor app... I don't know if you're up on that stuff.
No.
On Nextdoor app, I'm just looking at it right now. There's a Mesopotamian skull. He's calling himself a skull crofter. So that, I mean, it's probably the same sort of ballpark, isn't it? These people are out there. A lot of them... obviously, a lot of them retired during... Well, a lot of them...
retired in the first century.
A lot of them retired during the first century. I mean, that is AD, not BC, but it's still a long time ago. I think some of them will just do it for something to do, to be honest.
Well, we've lost that respect in this country, haven't we, for those traditional...
Spine masons.
Crafts.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, it's very rare you find a kid these days who wants to be a skull mason.
That's right.
It's a great shame.
That's right. And at the big black storage company, all of our storage units are coffin-shaped. It's just a bit of a joke we have. Just off the A4 junction 7.
Got a bit of spare time, why not bring the kids to Vultureland? Just off the A4 junction 5.
When you see our prices... Your jaw will drop off.
A bit like mine did 4,000 years ago. I'm currently holding it in place using my skeletal hand, which also fell off several thousand years ago. And that's being held in place by My skeletal dog.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've actually I've Necronicon'd up the bee machine.
So, oh, nice.
Because obviously all the animals left, all the little bears got out, and I've just replaced them with the haunted skulls of old sailors that washed up on the beach near me. So
it's got a lovely it's sort of that mixture of it. You know, let's face it, it's a bit macabre, isn't it? All the all skulls and bones that you've sort of crafted into a complex mechanical system. It's a little bit macabre, isn't it? But at the same time, it's got that fun. It's got that skeleton orchestra, hasn't it? It's got that.
There's a jolly side.
It's got the xylophone on the bones.
Yeah,
it's got the xylophone bones. It's got that jolly sort of because you know the human skull. It take off the flesh and it is grinning. You know what I mean? It is having a laugh.
We're all just walking dead smiles, aren't we? At the end of the day, and it's worth remembering that.
Yeah,
if you're ever a bit low.
Yeah, and you can buy a little framed poster of that, can't you? In the Bean Machine gift shop, Ben. Which how's that going?
The council have shut that down.
Yeah.
I tried to get a discount from business rates. Obviously, if you have a Necroni gift shop, you don't have to pay business rates.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, if you put in too many skulls, it actually doesn't count as a Necroni gift shop.
It becomes a mausoleum.
It's just a mausoleum, exactly. Yeah,
and then you're in a completely different tax bracket.
And then there's a lot of red tape with the mausoleum. So
Well, we bit off more than we could chew. Maybe next time we just start with a sort of mini crypt and build up slowly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, well, let's see. Okay, well, let's turn it on and watch the bones fly.
Mm.
This week's topic was sent in by, can it be, Neil?
Neil. Necroni storage, we can store your family heirlooms for as long as Henry Packer can say kneel. That's right.
Forever.
You will be kneeling when we behead you if you don't keep up with your payments. The Necroni storage. And that's a guarantee. By the way, I didn't even breathe in for that, Neil.
You were already on a down breath when you started.
I was already on a down breath, so that was just spare air that I keep in my cheek pockets. And,
well, it sounds increasingly like you got an independent Neil lung to me.
It's starting to feel like that, isn't it?
I will spare the listener the actual Neil jingle. Last time we put it in the podcast, this is how receptive I am to the smallest amount of criticism.
Oh God!
We put it in a couple of weeks ago, and then somebody very politely wrote, I think on the Patreon group, I could certainly do with never hearing that jingle again. And I thought, yeah, okay.
Benjamin.
Yeah, it's gone.
How thin his skin.
I know.
Benjamin would respond. That's not how Benjamin would.
Well, Benjamin would play it now three times in a row.
Yeah.
With it getting slightly lower each time and slightly more distorted.
I love the Neil jingle, personally.
Always remember who might really be behind those emails. Ben.
Good point. Okay. The thing is, they were being perfectly polite. They weren't.
That's how they draw you in. That's how they do it.
Also, that hurts a bit more, doesn't it? Because it's a considered...
Yeah, you can't just write them off as a ne'er-do-well.
Mm.
Also, how many people genuinely, literally ne'er-do-well? Do you know what I mean?
Most people sometimes do well.
Yeah, yeah.
Sporadically do well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Henry, you're an always do well.
Yeah. Do what? I always do my best. And if that's not good enough, then fuck yourself.
I've got a thriving bone-based storage business. I don't need you.
I don't need you. Unless you want to be part of my business. Literally. You're not laughing along. I know. That's because the poison that I put in your BAP earlier has worked and you can't operate your face anymore.
Now get in that barrel of lime.
Now.
Where do you get the skeletons from?
You know what? That is one of the questions. I go around schools and I go around, you know, business universities and so on, and people doing MBAs. One of the questions I often get asked is that. And it's one of those ones where I'll tell you if you meet up with me privately later on. That's what I say to people.
And you will be offering them a BAP.
What I'll say to them is, let's discuss this over a private BAP. Yeah?
No, don't worry, you don't need to bring anything. I'll bring the BAP.
I'll bring the BAPs. No, you say you're into BAPs. So don't worry, no, but you try a different kind of BAP. You've tried all different kinds of BAPs. You actually make BAPs. Well, eat this BAP now, put it in your face now, get the BAP down you now, too late, you can't control the swallowing mechanism if I punch you in the gill. Punch you in the gill. That's
you're talking to some kind of fish man.
Didn't know you had a gill, did you, till I punched you in it.
It's a vestigial gill. We've all got vestigial gills that we don't know about.
Henry, have you punched a gill into someone? I'm going to punch you in the gills. I haven't got gills. You will in a moment.
I punch this haddock head into you. There is a kind of dark business circuit that I do. So it won't be the big business schools. It won't be LSE and stuff like that. It'll be, some of them will be, there'll be people there that are, you know, some of them may be semi-humanoid. Some of them may have gills. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's kind of a dark, it's more of an underworld sort of. So universities that are in crypts, for example.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For example, they're doing some really interesting stuff actually currently up in Necrone, Loughborough. The guys up there,
yeah,
some quite good courses they're running.
And of course, obviously the Necrone University of Florida is it's quite good, isn't
it? Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Right, this week's topic.
Oh yeah,
has sent in by Neil.
Mm. Well done, Henry. Excellent restraint.
Yeah,
yeah. He's used up his Neil Young. Neil Young. Neil Lung.
I've used up my Neil
for the day.
Have you used up my nail lung for the day, yeah?
The topic is TV crime shows.
Holy moly.
What? Holy moly. I mean, that's right up Wozniak Street, isn't it?
Not half.
That's your bread and butter.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we paddle in the swimming pool of definitions to begin with?
Mike, inflate it. I've got the hose. Let's fill this baby up. Ben, you got your little Victorian boy outfit on? Get splashing.
I've got my woolen swimming costume.
Well, I'm not... Okay, I've got to say so. I do think I'm not quite as into TV crime shows as you guys. I prefer to read... You know, I mean, I know it's silly, obviously, but for me, the mystery of, you know...
How will this metaphor end?
Exactly. For me, the mystery is, oh, will this poet be able to keep up their use of alliteration in this sonnet? Because they've set the bar pretty high in the first stanza, or a couple of lines. Do you know what I mean? Also, will it be A-B-B-A-C-C-A-A-B-B? Or will it be A-B-A-B-C-C-A-A-B-B? Or will it be B-B-B-A-A-D-B-C-D-D? Or will it be A-A-D-D-D-B-B-C-C-C? Those kinds of questions.
Yeah, a quiet Friday night in for you might just be looking at one little corner of a Manet, mightn't it?
Exactly. For example, just marvelling at the way the light can catch a teapot in a Manet, for example. For me, yeah. I mean, that, I realise that just makes me a silly idiot, really.
Manet must have been pretty pissed off that there was a Monet. I mean, like, your whole brand is you're called Manet.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know who came first, but then Monet pops up.
Yeah.
And then for the rest of time, when someone says Manet, they go, do you mean Monet?
Yeah.
Or do you mean Manny from Supergrass? What do you mean? Which one are you talking about?
Do you mean Manny from Supergrass? Manet. Or
Manet out of man A to E.
Or do you mean the word money as said by a Scouser? Manet.
Oh, God, that was a hate crime, I think.
That's technically a hate crime. I'm not going to fight this in court.
Henry Packett and the Sun are no longer welcome in Liverpool.
I'm guilty. Would it be the UN that come for me here?
I think it's probably just, you just need to walk into the Mersey of your own accord, I think.
I'm just going to walk into the Mersey. I will do my time in the Mersey.
But as you wash through it into the sea, don't bounce off the Liverpool banks, whatever you do. Don't touch that ground.
Because they will come, it'll just be alive with Scouser hands trying to grab me.
Just pull you to bits.
Angry Scouser hands.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to pop my face in. No, I apologise to everyone involved for that. Can I say that, actually? I once went to Liverpool. I had a lovely time. Went to a cafe. Had a really good breakfast in there.
You sound surprised.
It's quite a famously fun and exciting, thriving city.
Exactly. So it doesn't need me to say this, does it? So I don't know what we're making a big deal about it, Sam. No, I'm what are you trying to imply? Yeah, I'm just saying I went there and it wasn't a big deal. I had a really nice sandwich, a nice breakfast. Well, not a big deal. I wasn't surprised.
Well,
I was bored. I was bored by how good it was. What? I thought, this is what I'm expecting. What did I thought I'd expect? What did I think I was going to... It's not even a big deal. Do you know what I mean?
If anything, it didn't live up to your expectations.
If anything, it was a letdown. This is shite. If anything, I thought it was absolutely shite, this breakfast. Make me come into this city again. You see, damned if you do, damned if you don't with this stuff. Literally. No, I did have a nice time there.
You sound surprised.
It's that kind of...
It is really good. That made me sound surprised.
It's the curse of the Londoner, you see. I can't... Anything I say about anywhere else in Britain be actually quite good, actually. You know what? It's actually... And what someone from London means when they say that is, you know what? It's actually not that different from London. That's what they're actually saying.
You can drink the tap water.
You can actually drink the tap water up there. You know what? I actually had a poached egg. And they asked for a poached egg. They knew exactly what I was talking about. It's fine. Anyway, sorry.
They didn't even poach it in lager, which I assumed is what they were going to do. I had that for, I know this is slightly off topic. I think this happens to a lot of people. When you first go to the Highlands of Scotland, you just go, what? This is in Britain?
I know. No,
this is part of the UK. What?
No, but Ben. But listen, don't, because there's another thing about bits of Britain. Some of them are secrets that Londoners like to think it's our little secret. So actually, we think the Highlands basically belongs to London. We think the same about Cornwall. It's basically ours.
And the Suffolk coast.
But don't tell everybody. Don't tell anyone else. Shh. Yeah, no. The Highlands is incredible. Are incredible, aren't they?
There's a lot of it. There's a lot more of it than you'd imagine.
But the beaches are great. Mm. It's got an amazing coastline. It's there's deers everywhere.
I was once driving in the Highlands, right, and literally over every hill. You'd see a whole load of different hills beyond, you know. So you'd be driving up a hill,
mm-hmm.
and then you'd get to the top of it. There'd be all these new hills in front of you. And I used to stop it. I'd stop the car sometimes and get out and just look at all these hills. And go, I just cannot believe how many hills there are here and how nice looking they are. I'd get back in the car, drive on a bit further over another hill. There'd be a whole new bunch of hills again. It was incredible. Absolutely. Genuinely, though, I absolutely love the Highlands.
Because they're not see-through, are they? That's the trouble. You can't, yeah. They've got those opaque hills, so you can't see through the hills to see the hills. You've got to get to the top of the hill to see the other hills.
Well, that's how it works up there. It's completely non-pompadour. Mm. They haven't, obviously, if that was London, we'd have them transparent. You'd be able to see through the hill, see the mechanism.
You know what you're dealing with immediately, in one go, you'd be in one gulp.
Like they've done on the Elizabeth line, which are the new tube line that I'm quite excited about. You can see all the rivets. Mm. There's a lot of exposed rivets in the tunnels. That's, again, if... The Highlands, you can't see any of the rivets. They're all hidden.
They're all mossed over, aren't they?
They've covered it in with this exact kind of live. It's kind of live wallpaper, sort of live, almost like a live carpet,
Like a faux fur, but beyond it,
it's sort of like a faux, like a faux fur.
Also, if you do go to the Highlands, remember you can stop off at the Super Dragon Cafe on the way. Pompadour discount.
Mm. Yeah.
I can't remember if that's running at 10 or 15%. I think it's 15. Doesn't apply to Mockers and hot chocolates, but, you know, fill your boots on the way.
Do it. You know, a good thing about the Highlands is that I love the palette of the Highlands. Oh, God, I can't believe I've just said that.
The purple heathers. The mosses.
I can't believe I've just said that.
The thistles.
The song of the capercaillie.
No, but it's the colour palette, which is...
That feeling you get when you sink your teeth into a live ptarmigan.
Is that kind of is that a sort of river mammal?
No, it's like a grouse or like a partridge.
But what? Because I've been watching the Attenborough thing about the UK,
the British Isles.
Mm. Politically, I don't know how it works. Is it UK?
Yeah, yeah. Because they hit Northern Ireland as well, don't they?
Okay, yeah. But if a squirrel goes over the if his crew are following a squirrel in Northern Ireland and it goes over the border into Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, what's the situation there?
Well, in terms of what the DUP think about the squirrel, do you mean?
Was he allowed to follow the squirrel?
DUP would be very cross about it, I think. Yes, I've seen a bit of that show. I mean, what it needs to really give it another boost, of course, would be a nice little murder or two.
Well, the thing is, you do get a lot of murders in the nature shows, but it's not generally done with who did it.
There's no suspense. I mean, in the opening scenes, there's a seal pup gets it. I found that very hard to stomach. Indeed.
Oh, that was
and
awful.
You saw it happen. You saw the culprit.
When I saw that happening with the seal pup, I tried to channel how I feel about pigeons. Like we discussed last week, I just think there's loads of them. They're not really, you know what I mean? They're not a big deal. There's loads. They're sort of like...
It's like swatting a fly.
It's like swatting a pigeon, yeah.
I couldn't do it. And I was genuinely distressed. And I'm much more comfortable watching a fictional murder. I'd much rather see a human being killed fictionally.
The thing with animal murders is on those shows, they're always quite straightforward, isn't it? So it's just like, I don't know what killed that seal. Was it a gang of squirrels?
It was county lines squirrels. It was a territorial move.
It was almost done as a warning, wasn't it, to other seals, which is, you're on our turf here.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels
we've got the beach now.
We've got the beach all in, yeah, just one, yeah, quite a hench squirrel with a snooker ball and a sock.
Yeah.
It was horrible.
We're moving food, mm-hmm. Yeah? We're moving food through this beach. If you don't like it, maybe you'll end up like Gary the seal.
Who is now part of the walls at the Necronis storage on the A4. In the animal room.
Our fully waterproof Necronis storage seal-lined coffin boots. Seriously, they're good for storing snooker cues.
Vinyl.
Lacrosse stuff, sports gear, vinyl. Honestly.
And cashmere.
We're not as bad as people say. Honestly, we're actually quite nice people. So, frankly, it'd be nice to get some business going. So, just come on down. And remember, our prices are... murder. Is that a phrase?
So Mike, it sounds like you were genuinely quite distressed by this, but can you recount the murder to me?
It was an orca doing the murdering.
How is the orca doing that? Just straight in the mouth?
Yeah, just grabbed it, was chasing a, knew there was a seal hiding in a little gully, grown-up seal, went into this sort of gully, grown-up seal scarpered. Baby, so I don't want to go through it. It was just sitting there. It was just sitting down.
And was this in Britain?
This is in the first. This is one of the first things in the first episode. Takes it off and then as David Attenborough puts it, teaches the other orcas how to drown it. I was like, come on, David.
Oh God.
It's just. Can we just see a squirrel eating a nut?
And this is happening in the Thames, next to HMS Belfast.
No, this was off the coast of the Highlands, wasn't it? This is maybe. Or maybe even Shetland Isles. Shetland Isles, it might have been.
Right.
It was. But what you see, in the kind of TV show that Mike likes to watch, the way this murder would have happened is that one of the... for a start, they wouldn't have been called killer whales, because that really does totally... that blows it a bit, doesn't it?
He'd be called Reverend Whale.
He'd be called Reverend Whale, and he'd be... We'd first meet him unassumingly tending to his mint plant.
He's in a very small parish.
Yeah.
He's got quite an anxious housekeeper. There's a rambunctious landlord nearby.
Yeah.
But of course, we do need to raise money for the church roof.
It's already got three roofs. I know, but it needs more roofs. You can never have too many roofs, what with global warming. And then what would happen is there'd be a complex plan involving his twin brother, who he hasn't seen for... We think he hasn't seen for decades.
Who's an arch villain?
Well, he'd go out that day dressed up as him.
And prey on the vulnerable.
Yeah.
The thing is, with these animal shows, the murders are very straightforward, right? It's just like an orca drags a seal.
There's no
sea.
Subtext. It's just, it's lunch.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Motive is lunch.
Wouldn't it be better if Attenborough was able to present a programme where an orca manages to murder a seal, but the seal was in a locked room all along?
Locked from the inside. No other way to escape.
How did he do it?
Yeah.
Yeah, now I'm in. Now I'm interested. See, that's exactly. Right up my street. Then I could handle it.
Oh, Ben, I thought you were going to say, wouldn't it be good if Attenborough did a show where there's an orca going after a seal and there's 10 celebrities in between? Titchmarsh dressed as a walrus.
Is that a seagull? No, it's John Travolta.
It's Joanna Lumley dressed as a sea otter.
They've got 10 weeks to save that seal. Welcome to save that seal.
So isn't this like, is it physical challenges or is it more like kind of crystal maze, kind of like mental challenges or a bit of both?
I think a bit of both, probably.
I think it's just thrashing through the North Sea, just the aching cold of the North Sea.
I don't think Titchmarsh is going to last very long, especially in a walrus costume if you threw him in the North Sea.
I think he'd surprise people. I think that's going to be one of the talking points. You get to episode 6, you're like, I can't believe Titchmarsh is still going. He's covered 312 nautical miles. It's unbelievable. I thought he was going to shinny up that oil rig and take refuge. He didn't. He kept going.
He said in the first episode he thought he could garden his way out of anything, and it turns out to be true. He's just gardening his way through it. Problem after problem, he's using gardening
to
solve it.
Kelp plains at the bottom of the North Sea are just have you seen them? They're extraordinary.
They've never looked so neat.
He's put a pergola in. For those listening outside of the UK, Alan Titchmarsh is our premier television gardener.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Also writer of appalling erotic novels.
Well, they're a smash hit, though, aren't they? Have you read any?
I've not read any. Yeah.
You've taken a dive?
Well, no, because every year, there's an award that has been running for many years, which is the worst bit of purple prose in a novel that year.
Is it the Bad Sex Award or something?
The Bad Sex Awards, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Lewd content warning. Lewd content.
Hey, hey, hey. And I think Titchmarsh now basically
every year.
Him every year.
Is it? So I assume it's just just digging metaphor after digging metaphor after digging metaphor, is it? He knew he was really going to have to put his hand to the shovel this time.
Yeah, because pruning's hard to crowbar into.
He was pruned and ready to go.
What else is there? Weeding. I mean, again, yeah, it's digging. Yeah.
She felt like hot compost under his hands.
His fingers were all over her like fresh-born slugs.
So Alan Titchmarsh won the award for his novel Mr. McGregor, in which he described a man becoming entangled in the lissom limbs of his human boa constrictor.
Mm. What, so he's being strangled by his own phallus? A man?
And then swallowed by it.
And all whilst in a locked room, locked from the inside.
Can I say, that's actually quite a lot darker and more interesting than I was expecting from Titchmarsh's prose. Which book was that, Ben? No, just because I've got the Kindle, so I can literally, I could be reading it in minutes. I genuinely thought the use of language was quite interesting.
It was called Mr. McGregor. Who, of course, is the name of the gardener in the Peter Rabbit books.
Oh, is it about him? Is that why the rabbits are able to run rampage with his radishes? Because he's just solid, wall-to-wall banging.
I tell you what, I'm the person who does the most banging around here by miles, and I live surrounded by rabbits. That's right.
They're at it like me.
that's how I say the phrase. I say they're doing it like me. That's how I say the phrase. No, that isn't a carrot. I've got a very 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 serious problem with that. Kind of
with my massive orange pythonic dong.
Yeah, and it's even got the little white bit, the kind of tenderly bit at the end, like when you buy an organic carrot. Yes, I know, it's very, very, yes. That's also part of the problem. It's all
and
very...
you will need to peel or grate it, yes, otherwise it's it's a non-starter. And we will need to boil it for at least 3 minutes, otherwise it's too much work.
Or at least stick it under a harsh tap and you scrub it good and hard with a wire brush. But otherwise, you're going to get nothing out of it. It's incredible how many parallels there are between it and an organic carrot. It's extraordinary. But I repeat this, it isn't a carrot.
And it's certainly not organic.
Oh, yeah.
I've lacquered my penis.
I've also drenched it in pesticides.
Oh, God.
Can I say, I think this is our most lewd series to date, you know?
It might be, could be.
More lewd. That's going to have a lewd content warning on it, that bit.
Yeah, I think that's probably going to have to be our second of the episode as well.
Bloody hell. Mm. I have to put one at that beginning of the whole thing.
Mm.
Maybe we need a sort of ultra lewd, you know,
God. Titchmarsh level.
Titchmarsh level lewd content warning.
Can I say also, for someone to go into erotic fiction and to dabble in the arts of double entendres and this sort of like, you know, ripe analogies and, you know, bawdy wordplay that I imagine fills his books, to go into that when you've got the word titch in your surname, do you know what I mean?
He's also got the word arse in his surname. He's got both tit and arse in his surname.
It's normal as a determinism, isn't it, really?
He's got the word tit and arse in his... Hang on, let's just think. How many rude words are there in Titmarsh's surname?
And his first name is an anagram. Okay, time for your emails. And in place of our normal email jingle, we are going to play one sent in by Mary Ellen. Thank you very much for sending it in, Mary Ellen.
Thank you.
She writes, "Dear Beans... I'm in particular Jingle Man and original sexy monk, Bean Partridge."
Lovely.
"Please accept my version of the email jingle in Latin."
Ooh.
Humitas email. Tibi gratias ago. Nuntio qui presesero.
Sexy, wasn't it? Ooh,
that was absolutely outstanding.
Oh, that sexy monk.
That's sexy, sexy chanting. Oh, that sexy Latin.
That was magnificent.
That was
I feel very relaxed after that.
Yeah.
Oh, it was absolutely X-rated practically, that wasn't it? I really, it was sort of like, I picture a sort of pew just writhing with monks. All under a kind of flickering neon bulb. Also, was that like an American accent on some of the Latin in the background?
Well, there seemed to be two voices. There was a lower voice and a higher.
The lower voice, I thought, didn't have an American accent.
Don't know. Didn't pick it up.
Or maybe not.
I was pleased. I know the Latin word for robot now.
Yeah.
Which is?
Robot.
I was in there as
robot. The word robot was definitely in there.
Email also. I mean... I don't think emails were around in the time when...
Well, that's why it comes from the Latin originally, doesn't it?
but Ben, can I say that is exactly why you need to visit Pompeii, because that's what you think. You go to these Roman ruins and you think they won't have sewage. I mean, they won't have drainage. They do have drainage. Yeah. They won't have little
phone repair shops.
They won't have phone repair shops. They did.
And actually, you know, you can see those people who were caught in their final moment as the lava arrived.
Yeah,
one of those guys is actually just deleting an email from LinkedIn.
That's right.
As he becomes his own screen grab.
And you can almost see in his face him thinking, I'm sure I unsubscribed from this. Why am I keep getting emails from LinkedIn? we've had an email from Dan from Aberdeen.
Hello, Dan.
But he's living in the north of Sweden via Bremen.
Mm.
Hello, Beans. I would like to recount to you what happened on the day my son was born. My partner and I arrived at the maternity unit at around 4:30 a.m. and I started playing the playlist she had carefully curated, which would be playing throughout the birthing process. Mm-hmm. Without going into details, there were complications, meaning my partner needed an emergency cesarean and a general anaesthetic, which required a pausing of the playlist and being whisked off to the operating theatre. I then met my son for the first time. It was glorious. I was now a provincial dad. Wonderful. Congratulations, Dan.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
My partner was out for the count in another part of the hospital, and I was left mostly on my own with our newborn son back in the delivery room. I decided I would press play on the playlist and enjoy this moment with music. I was surprised then to hear Henry Packer presenting a riddle about a tweed tube that can travel at 120 miles an hour or something. I'd pressed play on my podcast app instead of my music app. Following his birth, my son heard the voice of Henry Packer before the voice of his own mother.
And of course, and unfortunately, with Swedish people, it's exactly the same as with eagles, which means that I am now bonded.
Now being printed onto you.
Yeah, he is now imprinted onto me, that child. So
that hardwiring, it sets early.
Yeah. So basically, if you want to feed that child, I assume they'll be having difficulties. That what you need to do is you need to Google my face, do a printout. You need to get down to your whatever the Swedish equivalent of Snappy Snaps is. You need to get that made into a face mask, which you then need to wear. You're then going to have to make a hole in the mouthpiece.
You do sell Henry Packer scent, don't you, online?
Yes, you can buy that. You can buy that online.
The scent pack.
Although, between you and me, a lot of it isn't actually my scent. It's just taken from men with a similar build. but it's you know, it's near enough, it'll help, so anything will help. So you need to put that now a lot of people think what they need to do is to get two of those masks, put them one on each breast, and get the nipples coming out through the mouth. That actually isn't the right way to do it.
you might be surprised to learn.
So I hope they haven't already gone down that road. What you actually need to do is, because it's the same as with eagles, what you need to do is wear that mask yourself, then you need to go into the garden or into a local park and get a handful of worms, collect as many worms as you can, get those worms in your mouth, put the mask on, and then you need to spit or dribble those worms out into the eagle child's mouth.
There we go, Dan. Hope that helps.
Well, congratulations, Dan.
but I tell you what, it's a wonderful moment, and also it's a lovely age, isn't it?
So Dan writes, he does also have what appears to be an onion shaped birthmark on his right thigh.
Holy moly.
Could there be a third?
A third onion child linked to one of the beans. What's it called again? Bonded.
Imprinted.
Imprinted. Imprinted on one of the beans.
Each one. You think each of us has an onion child?
It could be.
Maybe.
Well, it's all the more important then that you're feeding him lots of worms through that Henry Packer mask. Nice and strong.
Yeah. Get him. You need to get him really, really nice
perhaps
and strong.
A couple all of, that. When he's a bit bigger, some shrews, a couple of baby rabbits, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And keep those shrews skeleton in. Let him crunch it all down. Yeah.
Yeah, he's got to crunch them down.
You've got to crunch them down.
Because so often these days, babies are eating shrews off the bone. And
pureed shrew.
You know, it's the nanny society gone mad, because how are we preparing them for real life? You know what I mean? They think they've had everything on a plate, they've had everything boned.
Filleted dormouse. It's no good.
Crunchy, crunchy protein.
Gareth emails, "Hello Beans." Now this is in reference to the episode we did about ice creams, in which Henry came up with what he described as a $1 billion idea.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Yeah. Typical. I said that. This is typical of me. I had a $1 billion idea and I've not thought about it once since, and someone else has probably gone and done it now.
Well, typical. Here we go. He writes, "I'm afraid you might get a few emails along these lines, but I'm sad to say that Ready Scooped won't be the idea that makes Henry his first billion. ... Unless he's happy for that first billion to come courtesy of a franchise agreement with the Russian government."
Oh my... Not again!
Ready-scooped ice cream is already a hit in Moscow.
Oh, my word.
They sell ice cream from booths ready-scooped. You just pick a flavour, and they come out with the freezer, cone and all.
Oh, my word.
He writes, obviously, Russia isn't high on anyone's travel destination list anymore, but I hope Henry still tries to smuggle the intellectual property of the idea out of Russia, and they make a film about him, like the one they're currently doing about Tetris.
Yet again, a great business idea of mine, it turns out, is basically just a rehash of an old Soviet trick. That's disappointing.
Like your idea that all farms should be collectivised.
Exactly, yeah.
Should be the ownership of the state. Yeah, that was going to be big, wasn't it? And then
that was going to be massive. It was basically ready to go.
Well, no, because then you thought about it and you thought, right, well, we'll then have to have a kind of secret police to make sure
that
nobody's taking any of the livestock or
selling it for themselves.
Yeah. Huge network of informants.
That's
the occasional ice pick assassination squad.
Yep. Encouraging children to inform on their parents.
Yeah.
It was all ready to go.
The budget gets out of control very quickly.
And it was called Packer's Big 5-Year Bonanza. Packer's Big Fun 5-Year Bonanza.
I think Soviet communism could have gone a lot better if they described things more in terms of bonanzas rather than just the 5-year plan, you know?
Yeah.
If they called it the 5-Year Bonanza.
Yeah.
Well, we live and learn. Okay, final email is from Robert. Hello, Beans. I write to access the only source of provincial dad wisdom that I know about, that being Mike Wozniak. Mm-hmm. Okay, or at least a correction of said dad wisdom via a subsequent listener bollocking.
Oh.
Please settle an argument I'm having with a colleague. She believes that there was nearly such a thing as an everlasting light bulb, but this was prevented from being marketed by a cartel of light bulb makers who foresaw greater profits from light bulbs needing regular replacement. I think this is nonsense of the Soviets used a pencil in space variety. Does Dad Wisdom Handbook have anything to say on the matter?
It sounds like a great bit of trivia, doesn't it? It sounds like really fertile trivia stuff for provincial dad barbecue style chat. It also does just sound like a different version of The Man in the White Suit to me.
What's that one?
Alec Guinness film, the Eden comedy. It's about a man who invents this sort of perfect thread that will never wear down and can't be dirtied, and he's hounded out of town by Big Thread.
Oh, because then, and the dry cleaners and stuff, and the soap people,
they'd all be done for. I think I'm with Robert of Sheffield here. I think it sounds like it's fiction, and I might be wrong. I'm not going to check if I'm wrong, and if he wants provincial dad advice, then what he needs to do is he needs to just make a decision which side of the argument he's on and stick to it, regardless of any evidence you're shown to the contrary. Just dig your heels in further. And if you are shown evidence, just say that evidence has been forged in some way. Question where it's come from, question its veracity. Just dig in harder and harder.
Cleave harder.
It's crucial.
To the
central
point.
That really counts.
And the other big thing, isn't it, Mike, is and be prepared to ruin a barbecue over it.
Oh, yeah. A barbecue, a car journey, a dinner party evening in a small rustic pub. Whatever it may be.
You definitely have to be able to weather a conversation with your wife that goes along the lines of, why does it matter that there's a bulb that's everlasting or not? Why does it matter to you?
And then you just say through gritted teeth, you don't understand, and you just stare at the road ahead. You stare at the road ahead. You whack it up into fifth. You obviously respect the speed limit.
I shan't be taken for a fool. Margaret!
And you go to bed that night, and under your breath, you're saying to yourself,
they'll say a lot of things about me, but they'll never be able to say, I didn't cleave.
And then you set your alarm for 3:30 a.m. At that point, you quietly get up, you go into an upstairs room, you plug in your electric guitar, which has headphones with it, and you...
You play Smoke on the Water for 3 hours.
Smoke on the Water until dawn.
Mike, I found recently, as a stress reliever, just popping my headphones on, plugging the guitar in and playing along to a backing track, the solo from Comfortably Numb to myself, like five times in a row.
Oh, wonderful.
Great way to spend 20
minutes. The ultimate mindfulness. Yeah. Right there.
Oh. Lovely. And tragic.
Bit of that, Robert. That's what you need in your life.
Yeah.
Because you'll always have your six string, regardless of the argument about light bulbs. You've always got your six string.
But Ben, think, imagine if someone secretly filmed your facial expressions while you're doing that and projected them onto Big Ben.
Oh, God. And then had Alan Titchmarsh describe them.
Yeah.
I do close the curtains when I do it.
Yeah, he's not an amateur. Come on.
Thank you to everyone who's joined our Patreon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can do so at patreon.com/threebeansalad. There's a monthly bonus episode and free episodes. And if you join at the Sean Bean tier, you get a little shout out in the Sean Bean Lounge, where Mike was last night.
You bet your bottom dollar.
It was the French firefighters wrestling, wasn't it?
And here's my report.
Bienvenue à la lutte des pompiers français au Sean
Welcome
Bean
to Lounge. The French firefighters wrestling at the Sean Bean Lounge. Owing to a culturally insensitive remark made by Sean Bean, all of the French firefighters refused to attend and instead went to see Avatar Way of Water in 2D with 3D subtitles.
Bidimensionnel avec sous-titres tridimensionnel.
The Sean Bean loungers were undeterred and, after weeks of preparation, keen to wrestle anyway. Nicole Jatkowski, Andrew Calburn, Animes and Timmy Tentos began with a four-way snake wrestle and were soon pounced on by Joseph Sherlock, Patrick O'Malley and Corgan Rivera in a triangle of sausages formation.
Patrick O'Malley et Corgan Rivera dans un triangle de formation des saucisses. Callum Franklin, qui avait le rôle de capitaine de lubrification, n'avait réussi à lubrifier...
Callum Franklin, who had the role of lubrication captain, had failed to oil any of the wrestlers, and the high friction levels quickly resulted in wrestler combustion. Nick Cullen attempted to put the fire out with a wet Jean-François Corté. Han Rai attempted the same by converting Valerie Vichek into flame-retardant powder, but Aisha B and Tom Milburn had been plying Valerie with Calvados, and the inferno was exacerbated.
Valerie Vichek avec du Calvados, et l'enfer a été exacerbé. Christopher Fairclough est allé chercher l'aide...
Christopher Fairclough went to fetch help from the French firefighters, but got engrossed in the film, stayed until the end, and then went for noodles.
Sans oublier le but de la soirée, Ian Naden and Erin Considine.
Not forgetting the purpose of the evening, Ian Naden and Erin Considine entered the ring for a classic Grecian-style grapple. But the heat of the flames shrank their leotards to the size of cornichons, crushing them within. Of those who registered to wrestle, only Cato, Ben Nothing and Laura Spence had survived up until this point on account of being late, on account of entering a Coast Guard shin-kicking contest next door by mistake. The wrestling ring having been reduced to ash by now, the three of them constructed a new combat area and en masse set upon James Irwin, who'd survived on account of getting his head stuck in a vertical radiator in the Sean Bean lose.
Se sont attaqués à James Irwin, qui avait survécu parce qu'il s'était coincé la tête dans un radiateur vertical. Après avoir utilisé de la graisse de paraffine pour se libérer...
Having used paraffin grease to free himself, Irwin was a powder keg waiting to blow. The spark, the lit barbecue used by Laura Spence to tip the match to her team's advantage.
À l'avantage de son équipe. Le résultat...
The outcome, wrestler flambé, left, right and centre. The French firefighters hit the late bar at their premier inn and had a cracking night.
Merci à tous.
Thanks all.
So that's the podcast. We'll play out with a version of our theme tune sent in by one of you, the listener.
Mm.
And I think we're going to play out with John from Bremen's Three Bean Mambo theme music.
Ooh, oh, Mambo. Nice.
I've put together a dark Mambo version of your theme music, which I hope you enjoy.
Thank you.
Sadly, it doesn't contain any real guitar. I'm sure this will come as a disappointment to Mike, but I'm sure Henry will appreciate that I'm not giving Mike the ammunition to bore him to death with guitar-related gushing. Well, too late, because we've already just done it just then.
Damn you. Damn you both. To hell.
There's always a way.
Thank you, John from Bremen. We'll play out with that. And thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Thanks, everybody. Cheerio.
Bye.
Thank you.